This is Adapting, the Future of Jewish Education, a podcast from the Jewish Education Project, where we explore the big questions, challenges, and successes that define Jewish education. I'm David Breifman.
Hi, everybody, and we're recording today's episode of Adapting on March 28, 2023, a mere 5 days after our most recent Jewish Futures Conference, the title of which was Robots, Rashi and Relationships, Jewish Education and AI. The person behind the Jewish Futures Conference and today's guest on Adapting is Dr. Samantha Vinneker-Meinrath, who currently serves as the Senior Director of Knowledge, Ideas and Learning at the Jewish Education Project. Samantha is a lifelong Jewish educator and learner. She's an expert on Jewish teens, Gen Z, experiential education, Israel, and questions of Jewish identity. Today's conversation is not going to be an analysis of the conference itself, but it's going to look at the exploration of the topics behind Jewish education and AI, hopefully provide some theoretical framing for many of us who are still befuddled about what all of this means, and maybe even some practical tips as we move ahead into this new uncharted venture. So Samantha, welcome and thank you for joining us on Adapting today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to have this conversation.
So let's just get it off the bat now and start talking about artificial intelligence, AI, what it is and what it isn't.
It's so many things, so it's almost hard to pinpoint. AI is everything from what we've been hearing about as ChatGPT and this opportunity to really engage with machine learning in new, unprecedented ways. It's Midjourney, where we saw just this past week as we record images of the Pope going viral wearing a puffer jacket, and people thought that it was real, but it turns out it was AI generated. It's art. It's the chat bot that helps you or allegedly helps you on a website. It's the automated voice system that you end up saying real person, real person, real person when you're trying to get customer service. It's popping up anywhere and everywhere and essentially feels unlimited right now in what it has the capacity and certainly will have the capacity to do.
So I don't want to age myself or you or anybody else listening to today's episode too much, but like we grew up watching the Jetsons in my family. Well, actually, that's a bit before my time, but I grew up watching reruns of the Jetsons in my family, and there were a bunch of robots running around, basically running households and running the world. Is that what we're talking about right now?
At this moment in the realm of education, I would say not yet. I too watched reruns of the Jetsons and do aspire to have someone who will pick up all of my clothes, but still at this point, that seems to be truly an of the future invention. More so what's happening right now are different ways for us to get and access and be in relationship with information. We have these platforms and artificial intelligence that give us the opportunity to access information in new ways and to be partners in its creation. I'm thinking in particular about AI-generated art, where there's controversies around it saying, how could this count as art when we think about the skill and technique and creativity that artists have used for millennia to say that now does it count as art if I could type in a combination of words into an image generator that produces something and I could enter that into a contest and potentially win? Is my skill not in my painting or my sculpting, but more so in my ability to put in the right thing into the algorithm to get the information that I wanted? Right now, we are still working in this way that's largely digital, but is rapidly becoming more and more concretized in terms of its implications for the work that we're doing.
So in some ways, this feels like almost any other conversation we've had about technology and Jewish education. In some ways, it might feel new and novel, but I don't think the question really is how can Jewish education take advantage of AI, so to speak. I think the question is really knowing that we are now entering into a generation of where young people are growing up with AI, whether it's implicit or explicit as part of their journey, is how do we just incorporate everything that young people are doing today in the work that we're all doing as Jewish educators? So are you able to point out maybe a couple of instances where artificial intelligence is already playing itself out in education and maybe even in Jewish education as well?
Sure. So I think part of what the challenge becomes is how much do we embrace, utilize, kind of go with the technology? As you said, knowing this is a whole new plateau to what it means to be digital natives. Now we're artificial intelligence natives coming out. And how do we make sure that we're harnessing that in productive ways? something that's already happening, at least in micro ways, is using ChatGPT, which is a increasingly well-known artificial intelligence that is a text-based intelligence system, to do anything and everything. You can put in, write my B'nai Mitzvah Dvar Torah on Parshat Balach and make sure to thank my mom and dad. And it will produce something that you still have to read over, let's be clear. It might not have the cadence of a 13-year-old's voice. It might not necessarily add in everything that that child would have wanted it to, but they could give that prompt and come up with something that's at least passable. So the instinct, perhaps, for many educators knowing that is we have to ban ChatGPT. We want this to be a thoughtful, generative process, not to have a teen, you know, put in a prompt and outsource this formative experience of deriving meaning making from Jewish text at this pivot point in their lifelong Jewish journeys. Instead, what I would posit is we have this opportunity to, yes, and to say that, read it, but let's see, this is not an infallible technology by any means. What sounds like you, what doesn't? What's accurate, what's not? What did this machine know? What did it have to know? And what's missing as we figure out how we can use these things to create lesson plans, to give sermons, to come up with activities? I personally used it to write an email recently just saying, what would ChatGPT say is the correct cadence with which to address this topic? And it gave me something, and I adapted it, because we're not adapting, to meet my needs and to put it back into my own voice.
So in some ways, I think your example is useful. In some ways, I think it's typical. And I think it's what I saw in terms of the reactions of many people in person at our Jewish Futures Conference. That is, it's very quick for us to put up the example of the kid using this technology to shortcut their Dvar Torah for their B'nai Mitzvah ceremony. In academic circles, we're already beginning to hear about college professors now basically being able to try and ascertain whether someone's submitting a term paper or a research paper that's been totally generated by artificial intelligence. And I think we do that on two levels. We jump straight to the negative. One, because it's a defensive mechanism to say it's never going to be quite as good and the kids are going to try and find ways around to circumvent the real education. On the other hand, that defense mechanism prevents us from fully understanding the true power of this technology, because actually, simultaneous to being able to do all of those things, it's actually opening up avenues and opportunities that young people are now taking for granted as part and parcel of their everyday life. And I'm thinking here, the unleashed potential of all of this is also really, really incredible, considering we're just at the beginning of this journey. And part of the issue with the Jewish Futures Conference was not only were we playing in the present, but to a large extent, almost by definition, we were trying to predict the future of Jewish education as well.
I completely agree with you. I think there are opportunities here, not only in terms of what this can do with us in terms of its educational capacity, but also in terms of how we relate to one another. So right now, there's generated from AI through the Midjourney platform, went, I would say, viral within Jewish communal circles. We can all take that for what it is. This person created Exodus through selfies using AI and created a series of photo snapshots using artificial intelligence that tell the story of the Exodus as though you were holding up a camera, a phone, and taking a series of selfies, everything from Egypt to the journey through the desert, crossing the Red Sea, as we're about to recount at Passover Seders as we record coming up just next week. This is like amazing. It's an opportunity. We talk so much in Jewish educational circles about making things personal, about meeting a learner where they are. At the Seders that many of us will be at next week as we record, we're going to say the phrase that we ourselves came out of Egypt. And we've worked in various platforms as educators to make that experience normative. We've done bibliodrama. We've thought about what does it mean to see oneself as though they came out of Egypt. And now there's this way, using this technology, to put oneself into that setting, to take the selfie, to put yourself into the background of Egypt, and to make it a multifaceted learning experience using AI. So there's the tangible things that we can hold on to and say, that's a really cool thing. And what are other moments in Jewish history that our learners can make meaning out of? What if I had been at insert event here? There's also this opportunity, once AI is there, the role of the educator can become different in that we are less focused, as has been the trend for many years now. We get to be a little bit less focused on inserting facts and more in engaging and relating and giving a formative experience. If a teen puts into ChatGPT, what should my Dvar Torah be on my upcoming Torah portion? Whatever comes out is an opportunity. If we look at it as they didn't do the work, they didn't do the soul searching, they just put it into an algorithm and that's a loss, then we're missing an opportunity to say all of the time that we would have spent just kind of figuring out what does this text say? Yes, and because now we get to figure out what's the meaning making from it? How do we relate and do the work that humans need to do in partnership with AI so that our education can continue to be lasting and impactful?
So here I think you might be either being too soft or too generous. I'm not sure exactly which one it could be. And one of the questions which was prepped for me for this conversation was like, are teachers going to be replaceable because of AI? And I think you've said in your answer quite quickly, no, but you've disguised it in a way which I think requires some sort of unpacking. And I think what you've said, and I want to be pretty clear about this, is that if you're an educator that spends all of your time with your students transmitting facts or information from you or from curriculum to the kids, then actually, yes, a robot could actually replace you and replace you pretty quickly if it's not already doing so already. If, however, you're a different type of teacher or a different type of educator who sees facts as only the vehicle by which you can develop relationships or you can conduct interactive experiences, which a robot has no emotional intelligence yet, I will say, to be able to control, then the robot at this stage has no possible way of replacing you. But in some ways, your answer is not unequivocal that educators can be replaced by robots. You're saying that certain educators actually can be, but certain educators cannot be. And I think that was part of the thematic which came out of the conference, which I really think is worth exploring a bit as well.
I would not say that educators can be. I would say facets of education 100% can be. As you said, if you're transmitting facts, and again, I think we can see artificial intelligence. Right now, it's loud. It's different. It's something that we've never seen before. To use the most overused phrase of the last few years, one might call it unprecedented. But it's also the next step in a journey of engaging with technology that we get nervous every stage, and then we figure out how to utilize. If we think about just the use of Google, the role of the educator had to adapt as soon as we entered into a space where I, as a learner, can look up absolutely anything at any moment and probably get the answer that I'm looking for, if not the correct answer, we'll see, within about 1 second. Educators had to figure out, then what's my role when you don't need me to do facts? You gave the example of the Jetsons. The example that I'm going to give that perhaps dates me is when I was growing up, my math teacher earnestly said, you need to learn addition, subtraction, multiplication, because it's not like you're going to be walking around with a calculator in your pocket at all times. Every single person in the world that is listening to this podcast and beyond is walking around with a calculator in their pocket at all times. That did not mean that math teachers became obsolete, and I understand that we still have to learn how to add and subtract. And so too, once we have the ability to generate that lesson plan, we'll still need the art of pedagogy in order to figure out, what am I trying to convey? How do I put it in the correct prompts? How do I test for understanding and measure success? So I think we have new partners in the work of education. And for me, what becomes that much more exciting is how much more time do we get to spend doing these really meaning-making elements when we can outsource parts, just as we did to Google, Safari, every new generation of technology from both inside and outside the Jewish world.
Yeah, I still think there's a bit of a subtle element to this, and that's basically also saying that if you are an educator who had assigned an assignment to some students that actually asked the question, what, or find out for me how this transpired in terms of you're asking the kid to regurgitate a bunch of facts, that's now regarded as being a pretty low level, if not average question to assign to any kid, because they could obtain that answer any which way and they could confuse you as to whether it was plagiarized or not. But artificial intelligence clearly makes that plausible, possible, maybe even predictable. And now we're saying, as educators, we just have to be better in terms of what we're actually asking our students to do. And the regurgitation of facts is now, I'm going to say it, regurgitation of facts is a 20th century skill, and it's no longer a part of a 21st century education, which requires the majority, if not any, of our attention anymore.
I completely agree. One of the questions that came up from participants during the Day of Jewish Futures, a bit tongue-in-cheek, but I think there's a real undercurrent of, is this the wave of the future, was, so could a bot substitute for me on Sunday? And if we reach the point where the answer becomes, other than that, presumably legally, you have to have an in-person person on premises to supervise students, the bot is doing everything that you're doing, we can say, what a win for technology, but also what a loss then, if that's what we've allowed the work of education to become. And what do we need to be adding in terms of that human touch to complement the technology in order to, again, stay relevant, keep pivoting, and have that lasting impact.
All right, so you just raised law. Let me go one step further. Let me raise ethics. And I think it's a really important consideration. It was one that was raised many times during the Jewish Futures Conference itself. I was struggling to find an example whereby ethics led to the development of technology. It's usually always the other way around. The technology is developed and then the ethicists have to follow. So what are the ethics and the ethical considerations around AI that we now need to start considering as we are on this journey together?
There are so many, and I'm going to give a couple of examples, really naming. This is just scratching the surface of how deep we could go into these topics. What are the ethical implications when we can generate images of people doing and being anything and anywhere, largely without their consent? When we see these, again, selfie journeys through the Exodus, to use that as an example, I'm taking my image, I'm using it for this educational purpose that's fun, and my learners will smile and my families will be impressed, and that's awesome. But we just saw, I referenced earlier, a picture of the Pope going viral in this puffer jacket where people thought it was real. They thought that that's what he was wearing and generated all of this commentary in terms of, what is this? What's happening? This is so strange. And the narrative quickly became about what he was doing when it wasn't even a real image. This was a doctored image. So how does that square away when our images can be used to put us into scenarios that we might never have put ourselves into and doing things that we might never have done? AI also still does rely on the wisdom of human beings in terms of how it's being programmed and what it's able to derive its knowledge, to use the term, from. Right now, it's using the internet, which is like the greatest compendium of human knowledge that has ever, probably will ever exist. But what's there, and how are we helping co-create what this artificial intelligence understands of the world? An example that I shared during the Jewish Futures Conference that I'll share once again now was that when I was testing out different types of the technology, I used an image generating platform, and I, work-life balance, was holding my baby at the time. So the person who was helping me test it typed in Jewish mother holding baby in the style of, and then put in a whole variety of different artists, Van Gogh and Rembrandt and Monet. And the goal was to see what it would come up with, how it would put this image into all of these different artistic styles. And part of what was interesting in terms of what came up is that the Jewish woman generated had a really large nose, had really curly, frizzy hair. And we see the bias that it was able to glean from the internet as it's trying to understand, okay, what does a Jewish woman look like? And we have to deal with that. We have to figure out what are the biases that are being perpetuated by artificial intelligence. That one was a negative. I also had a teachable moment in that same learning session about image-generated AI, where someone had typed in female Orthodox rabbi in the style of, again, a famous artist. And the image that was created was fascinating. It was of a black woman wearing tefillin, and it was awesome. And in my head, I was like, I could see this and 100% think it was a photo that someone had taken and say, I want to meet this person. And I didn't know about this individual. I presume maybe they exist and I genuinely don't know. But what do we do when the image seems like it's reality and it's not? And we have to become that much more savvy as consumers in terms of what we understand to be capital T truth.
Let me ask you a couple of other questions related to the conference as well. And I was really pleased to be able to see and meet up with so many people in person. And I met up with one of our former guests on Adapting, Melanie Levav, who has a special interest in teaching people about end-of-life rituals in a Jewish space as well. And she was there because she wanted to learn, can artificial intelligence help bring back people from the dead? Or are we able to actually recreate these conversations which people have deceased? Now, I know this is being done in terms of Holocaust education now, where we are actually able to put together the stories of survivors and people who are actually able to interact with people who survived the Holocaust who are maybe no longer with us, but interact and ask questions of their experience to do this. So this seems to be like an inevitable part. And I'm wondering here, like having a conversation with someone who is deceased based on the information you put into this robot or robotic figure is sort of interesting, scary, and possibly very comforting for many people to even contemplate.
It's interesting. It's really scary. I'm sure there are layers of implications that I'm not even thinking about. But what's coming to mind for me, that feels actually very Jewish in terms of it takes away the confines of linear time where there is a past, a present, and a future. And now we have this collective memory where elements of the past are in the present because we project ourselves back in time to the moment of the Exodus, to the moment of transcendence at Mount Sinai. We're used to stepping back in time in certain ways. And now this is bringing the past to the present, which feels more normative Jewishly than perhaps it does elsewhere. It can be comforting. It can be frightening. I think it takes away then some of the pressure, again, outside of the world of AI that we've been talking about as we, using the Holocaust survivor example, know that we're approaching the day where the Holocaust is going to slip from living memory into history as the generation of survivors die out. So what does it mean to harness that in the present so that it can remain personally accessible to some degree? And there's something really beautiful about that.
Let me ask you what might seem like a strange question. Okay, gender questions aside on this one, right? And there are many issues about robots and gender, but that's maybe a topic for another conversation. There are 9 people who turn up to pray, and then a Jewish robot walks into the room. Do we have a quorum that is able to actually participate in a prayer service normally requiring 10 people to make up a minion?
I'm very unclear of my answer, but it's feeling like a yes. We're used to utilizing a non-human, superhuman, as it were, stand-in for that 10th person in terms of if you have 9 and there's just not a 10th Jew in the vicinity, you can open up the ark and allow the Torah to complete the quorum of the minion. And if the robot has the knowledge of the Torah, the wisdom, dare I say, a little bit of emotional intelligence, and that it'll ask you how your day is, I've been to minions where there are people who can offer less in that regard. So it becomes really interesting. We have discussions throughout Jewish history about non-human actors. We have conversations about the role of an angel in Judaism, a superhuman being who's programmed, albeit from the divine, not from a human, to do one thing, to do a task. And now then its job is finished. And that's okay. And now we have these bots who are being programmed to do a task, perhaps innumerable tasks. But if we have the bot whose task is schmooze at Kiddush and complete that minion, I think I'm here for it.
All right. So I'm a bit biased and so are you. The Jewish Futures Conference was a real success. As far as we know, we're one of the first organizations to openly contemplate the role of AI in the Jewish community, specifically in Jewish education. We know we're one of the first to be venturing to that frontier. And here I want to like use this as a teachable moment for ourselves as well. Not everything went according to plan. Let's talk about one of our failures during the Jewish Futures Conference and talk about maybe failing forward and the launch or the anticlimactic launch of our bot, Botsheva.
So got to take the tongue-in-cheek puns where we can. Yes, we created what we were super excited to launch as the first Jewish educator bot, and we named her Botsheva. Still say the name was a win, and that is a hill that I will die on. She didn't work according to plan. We had created a series of questions that she would be prepared to ask, a series of questions that she would be prepared to answer, and opportunities that she would, in theory, have to engage with the community. The tech glitched and demonstrated there's so much work still to be done. I think part of the failing forward becomes working with our community to figure out what would we actually want from an educator bot. Part of what came up in the moment was people expecting her to essentially be an anthropomorphized humanoid option that had the breadth and depth of Jewish knowledge. They wanted to be able to ask about what's your take on this holiday? What's a lesson plan that I could do for this? They basically wanted to take what a ChatGPT platform can do and have it be something that they could also be conversational with, because we are always craving a further degree of interaction, human or human adjacent. So teachable moment, that seemed to be more of what people were searching for in that regard. And I think there's an opportunity to work with educators in the field to really think about if we're going to have Jewish educator bots, because they are coming and we're excited to have been that first dipping our toe into that pond. What do we need them to do? What do they need to know in order to be useful to our community? And what capacities do we need to call upon them for? We took that first step and I'm excited to see where else it goes.
Okay, so that was a failing forward moment. What was your highlight? What was the big number one takeaway, the big success story that you took from the Jewish Futures Conference? Admitting that you and I are both not, you know, we're not like coming to this without a bias or an agenda, but what was your number one takeaway that you want to share with everybody?
I am so excited by everyone else's excitement about this topic. I think that we could so easily be in a place where we're pushing back on it and saying, like, we've actually gotten along really well. We kept the tape recorder industry going for longer than I think anyone else, because we tape record B'nai Mitzvah Haftorah portions. And maybe we upgraded to like an MP3 player, but we don't need this. This is really scary. We don't want to engage. There was an energy to being in the room, to watching people play with technology, watching people allow themselves to be vulnerable and to try something new. I definitely was coming at this as a novice in terms of the tech and had the experience of playing myself. I did not win the trophy. There was, in fact, a trophy involved, but was super excited by all of that. But the other kind of counterpoint that I want to give, we're recording this as a podcast talking about tech and artificial intelligence. The energy of being in person is something that I really do want to name and highlight. We were able to engage with the technology, but there is something immeasurable about turning to the person next to you and talking about it organically in real time. And I think we were able to find that balance of we're together, we're being generative as full-on humans, but we have our partners in the technology, and I'm so excited to see what else comes from that.
Samantha, thank you so much for being with us on today's episode of Adapting. And actually, more importantly, even thank you so much for leading the charge on getting this Jewish Futures Conference together and really outlining some of these issues, bringing together such a vast array of different speakers and presenters on this topic. While I'm thanking you, I also want to thank our colleague, Tova Perlo, who helped put together the Jewish Futures Conference. I want to thank the people who produced today's episode, Dina Nussenbaum and Miranda Lapides. The show's executive producers are, as always, myself, Karen Cummins, and Nessa Lieben. And our show is engineered and edited by Nathan J. Vaughan of NJV Media. However, before I do my regular outro here by telling you all that you should go on to Adapting and leave us a 5-star rating, all that sort of stuff, I do want to mention something about the technology. If you've got this far with the episode, I want you to pay attention, because sometimes this is just a matter of us really doing things and using the technology to actually just adapt to what we're already doing. You know, use the example of a VCR or a tape recorder or an MP3 player. But here, I want you to say that you heard it first, recorded in March 2023, that there might be something about artificial intelligence which is actually helping to create the future and not just reflecting the future or reflecting the present. And here is where I really want us to use this episode as an exploration moving forward about what happens when the technology actually helps determine what's going to be taking place in Jewish education as much as we as educators try to capture it and utilize it for our advantage. Samantha, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
To learn more about the Jewish Education Project, visit us at jewishedproject.org. There you can learn more about our mission, history, and staff, as well as the Jewish Futures Conference itself. We are a proud partner of UJA Federation of New York, and as always, thank you very much for listening today.